जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जन बल्लभवा गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जन बल्लभवा गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदना ब्रज जन रंजना, यशोदानंदना ब्रज जन रंजना, जमुना तीरा मन चारी, जमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जन बल्लभवा गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जन बल्लभवा गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदना ब्रज जन रंजना, यशोदानंदना ब्रज जन रंजना, जमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामा हरे रामा राम राम हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामा हरे रामा राम राम हरे हरे, Thank you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Kishor Kishori Jai Kishor Kishori Jai Kishor Kishori Jai Kishor Kishori Jai Jagat Natha Jagat Natha Baladeva Jai Subhadra Jai Gauranitai, 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 Jai Gauranitai. Jai Prabhupada, 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 Jai Prabhupada. Jai Jai Prabhupad 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 Jai Jai Prabhupad Jai Jai Prabhupad 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 Jai Jai Prabhupad Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramhansa Parivajak Acharya Shruta Shruta Shri Shri Madhis Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai All glories to assembled devotees All glories to assembled devotees All glories to Guru and Gauranga Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaivam Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato jaye mudire Nashte prayeshu abhadreshu Nityam bhagavata sevaya Bhagavati ruttam shloke Bhaktir bhavati nashtaki Hare Krishna We are reading from Canto 10, Chapter 1, entitled The Advent of Lord Krishna, Introduction, Text Number 54 and 55. Shri Vasudeva Vacha Nahi Asyaste Bhayam Somya Yadvai Shaha Shri Ravak Putran samarpayase sva Yataste bhayam uttitam श्रीवासुदेव उवाच नाहि यस्यास्ते भयं सौम्य यद्वैषः श्रीरावक् पुत्रान् समर्पयिष्ये स्वा यतस्ते भयमुत्थितम् श्रीवसुदेव उवाच नाहि यस्यास्ते भयं सौम्य यद्वैषः श्रीरावक् पुत्रान् समर्पयिष्यस्य यतस्ते भयमुत्थितम् श्रीवासुदेव उवाच यस्यास्ते भयं सौम्य यस्वैषः शरीरवाक् पुत्रान् समर्पयिष्यस्य यतस्ते भयमुत्थितम् श्रीवासुदेव उवाच नहिष्यस्ते भयं सौम्य यद्वैषः शरीरवाक् पुत्रान् समर्पयिष्यस्य यतस्ते भयमुत्थितम् श्रीवासुदेव उवाच नाहि यस्यास्ते भयं सौम्य यद्वैषः शरीरवाक् पुत्रान् समर्पयिष्यस्य यतस्ते भयमुत्थितम् श्रीवसुदेव उवाच नाहि यस्यास्ते भयं सौम्य यद्वैषः शरीरवाक् पुत्रान् समर्पयिष्यस्य यतस्ते भयमुत्थितम् श्रीवासुदेव उवाच नाहि यस्यास्ते भयं सौम्य यद्वैषः शरीरे वाक् पुत्रान् समर्पयिष्यस्य यतस्ते भयमुत्थितम् श्रीवासुदेव उवाच श्रीवासुदेव सेड् न नाट् हि इण्डीड् अस्याः फ्रोम् देवकी ते आफ् यू भयम् फियर् सौम्य ओ मोस्ट् सोबर् यत् विच् वै इण्डीड् सा देट् ओमन् अहा डिक्टेटेड् अ शरीरा वाक् ए वैब्रेशन् विदौट् ए बाडी पुत्रान् आल् मै सन्स् समर्पयिष्यसे I shall deliver to you Ashyaha of her Devaki Yata from whom Te your Bhayam fear Uttitam has arisen Translations and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Vasudev said, O best of the sober, you have nothing to fear from your sister Devaki because of what you have heard from the unseen omen. The cause of death will be her sons. Therefore, I promise that when she gives birth to the sons, from whom you fear, from whom your fear has arisen, I shall deliver them all unto your hands. Purport. Kansa feared Devaki's existence because after her 8th pregnancy, she would give birth to a son who would kill him. Vasudev, therefore, to assure his brother-in-law the utmost safety, promised to bring him all the sons. He would not wait for the 8th son, but from the very beginning would deliver to the hands of Kansa all the sons to which Devaki would give birth. This was the most liberal proposition offered by Vasudeva to Kansa. Text number 55. Sri Shuka Uvacha Swasur Vadhaniva Vrite Kansastad Vakya Saravit Vasudeva Apitam Pritaha Prashasya Pravisad Griham. Translation and purport. Sri Shukdev Goswami continued. Kansa agreed to the logical arguments of Vasudev, and having full faith in Vasudeva's words, he refrained from killing his sister. Vasudeva, being pleased with Kansa, pacified him further and entered his own house. Purport. Although Kansa was a sinful demon, he believed that Vasudeva would never deviate from his word. The character of a pure devotee like Vasudeva is such that even so great a demon as Kansa firmly believed in his words and was satisfied. Yas yasti bhaktir bhagavate akinchana sarver gunes tatra samaste suraha. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 18, Text Number 12. All good attributes are present in a devotee, so much so that even Kamsa believed in Vasudeva's words without a doubt. Om Agyanti Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vanshavkalpataruvasya Kripa Sindhu Vayaivacha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advait Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So we are reading this particular section of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is preparing us for arrival of or appearance of Lord Krishna. So every now and then when I read Srimad Bhagavatam, I am reminded of the words of Srila Prabhupada, who introduced Srimad Bhagavatam to the Western world. And even in India, Srimad Bhagavatam became more popular and more known after Srila Prabhupada came up with his commentary on all these texts. So Prabhupada says that there is no need to study anything. If you want to gain knowledge, simply study Srimad Bhagavatam to get that knowledge. And it is so true when we read different parts, different sections of Srimad Bhagavatam. So when I was reading this particular two text or first text, 50, text number 54, I was, and some of the previous texts before that, I was, thinking about how Vasudev was trying to convince Kansa that he should not kill Devaki, and Devaki is not so harmful for him, and he was trying to make some kind of an arrangement so that Devaki survives. Now, when we try to translate it or connect it with the modern skills of negotiations and discussions and so on, so it is so valid there, that the technique which Vasudev used to convince Kansa is something which they teach these days in business schools. So I was reminded of a particular seminar which some of us attended, or most of us attended here in Naperville, which was given by Anuttama Prabhu. And he was talking about, it was a leadership seminar, and the topic of discussion was about similar, that, you know, how to negotiate and how to convince other people. And he gave like four words. Actually, he gave three words. The fourth one I have invented. So it is easy to remember if you remember the word nice. So if we remember nice when we are negotiating or discussing, are in a discussion with other person, we are trying to convince other person. If we remember this word, it will be so much easier for us to convince him. And what these four letters mean? So N stands for needs, I stands for interest, C stands for concerns, and I just said E, which is empathy. So if we pay attention to the needs of the other person, if we address his interest and concerns and have some empathy towards him, then I see very little reason for not convincing him or her. And he gave a very nice example that if we want certain things to be done, it is not really important that we go to the authorities or other person and tell them that this is what I want. So we should try to see in what is there for him in it. So in other words, we can see if we are wanting to do a particular program, or if we want to do a particular, you know, function or something, and we need some permission from somebody, we have to see what will be the interest or concerns of the other party involved. And if we approach him with those concerns and interests in mind, he will be convinced. He will be very happy that we are trying to see what he wanted to do, or we have already addressed the concerns which he had. And we have a very good chance of getting what we want. So here, looking at this particular verse, number 54, and the previous verses, this is exactly the technique which Vasudev used. He addressed concerns. Kansa had fear that Devaki's eighth son is going to be the cause of his death. So he addressed that concern of Kansa in a nice way, and because his approach was very systematic, he was able to convince him. There's another thing which I realized when I was going through these few verses, which says that sometimes one may not succeed by directly opposing a powerful force. And one very nice analogy was given, that I'm not such a great swimmer, nor I have ever swam in a river. But those who have the experience of swimming in a river, they could relate to this, that if the currents are fast and you want to, you know, swim across the river from one bank to the other, if you try to go against the current, it is not very easy. It's, as a matter of fact, almost impossible. So an expert swimmer will try to swim along with the current in a diagonal way and then reach the other bank with very little force. If we are trying to do the same with going against the current, it is really going to be very, very difficult. So far what I see, that this is the approach which Vasudev adopted, and as we are going along, we found that he was being successful. And the other reason why I feel he was successful was because He was his intentions or his the main purpose of doing all this was to serve the mission of the Lord. So he had that particular, you can say, service, or he had to, there was a purpose why he and Devaki were to have the Supreme Personality of Godhead born out of their union, and he was trying to serve that purpose. So Kansa had the fear of death, which is practically all of us also have, and that's the main underlying fear because of which we do what we do. If we had no death of fear, there will be so much which we do we will not be doing anymore. So Kansa had this fear too, even though he was a very powerful person. He was very, very strong, and he was, Vasudeva had been glorifying him as a very powerful king and very brave and so on. So in spite of all that, he had still the fear of death. And he had accumulated so much of material possessions were there. He had a big kingdom and so on. And when he heard that he will be killed, immediately he thought that all what he has accumulated and collected is going to go away. So this was something which was not so easily acceptable to him. This is another difference when we try to compare a devotee and a non-devotee, that a non-devotee or a demon will have hard time to accept the facts of life or the laws of nature or the laws of God. And Kansa was no different. He wanted to live forever, like we have seen in Srimad Bhagavatam. There are so many demons who really gained a lot of powers and benedictions, etc., just because they wanted to win over death. But we have also seen that death is, Prabhupada says that death, as sure as death. Death is as sure as death. So death is something which cannot be, we cannot get away from that. And so after successfully convincing Kansa about the arrangement he is going to make so that Devaki's sons will be brought to him as soon as they take birth, he, Vasudev, was able to convince Kansa. Then in the next verse, number 55, while Sukhdev Goswami is talking to Parikshit Maharaj, he says, Kansa agreed to the logical arguments of Vasudev, and having full faith in Vasudeva's words, he refrained from killing his sister. So the important application here is having full faith in Vasudeva's words, he refrained from killing his sister. So the danger or the risk involved for Kansa was huge. It was his life. And even then he agreed because Vasudev made a proposal. And now in our day-to-day life, and there are a lot of proposals which we come across. People make different kind of proposal to us. They want something from us. They will present a proposal and want us to respond favorably. But we don't always respond favorably to all those proposals. And why we don't do that? Because we don't believe what that person is promising. So here, and at the stake may not be so much as was here in this case. Here, Kansa's life was at stake, and he accepted Vasudev's proposal. Why he did that? Because the words of a devotee could be trusted. So this is a very important aspect which Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching us here. I will refer to that section which Prabhupada mentions in the purport from Canto 5, Chapter 18, text number 12, so that we know why, what kind of expectations are there from a devotee. So in the translation, Srila Prabhupada says, all the demigods and their exalted qualities such as religion, knowledge and renunciation become manifest in the body of one who has developed unalloyed devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. On the other hand, a person devoid of devotional service and engaged in material activities has no good qualities. Even if he is adept at the practice of mystic yoga or the honest endeavor of maintaining his family and relatives, he must be driven by his own mental speculations and must engage in the service of the Lord's external energy. How can there be any good qualities in such a man? So in the purport further, if we go, Srila Prabhupada has described the 26 qualities of a Vaishnava. So if you want, I can go through them. If everybody is familiar, then we can skip them. I think I can quickly go. It is not going to take more than a minute. So it says, he is very kind to everyone. He does not make anyone his enemy. He is truthful. He is equal to everyone. No one can find any fault in him. He is magnanimous. He is mild. He is always clean. He is without possessions. He works for everyone's benefit. He is very peaceful. He is always surrendered to Krishna. He has no material desires. He is very meek. He is steady. He controls his senses. He does not eat more than required. He is not influenced by the Lord's illusory energy. He offers respect to everyone. He does not desire any respect for himself. He is very grave. He is merciful. He is friendly. He is poetic. He is expert. And he is silent. So one of the reasons why I read this, though I read it before coming for this presentation, I read it myself, and I felt that, you know, we, some of us, or at least I used to consider myself a great devotee, but after going through these qualities, I realize that I'm far from being a devotee. If I could even aspire to become a devotee, it will be really wonderful, because that would mean inculcating some of these qualities which are expected of a devotee. And this also means that it puts a lot of responsibility in all of us. All of us who wear dhoti, kurta, apply tilak, wear kanti mala, and we are chanting, we are representatives of our society. We are representatives of ISKCON. We are Srila Prabhupada's soldiers. And we are expected to have these qualities which have been mentioned in that canto number 5. So in other words, if an outsider who has little bit of familiarity with ISKCON, and he knows how a devotee is supposed to conduct himself, he would expect that we conduct ourselves that way. Now, do we really do or not? That's a question which we have to ask ourselves. This is for each one of us to individually think about and see what we do. So another point which you know, came to my mind when I was reading this particular section was, we often say that Srila Prabhupada came here, he, you know, in the beginning had, of course, faced challenges, and then later on he came in contact with different people, he spoke to them, and they did exactly what Srila Prabhupada wanted them to do. And then I asked myself that why Srila Prabhupada was so successful. And one of the reasons which I believe is that Srila Prabhupada practiced what he preached. This is one of the most effective way of being successful, especially in our business. If we practice what we preach, the persons to whom you are preaching will listen to you and will try to accept what you are trying to convey to them. On the other hand, if we have prepared a very nice presentation, we make a wonderful impact on the audience, but that impact is only very short-lived, because the audience also know that the preacher didn't really mean it. He was just saying it for sake of presenting. There's a nice story I'm reminded of. I think you might have heard that earlier also. So there was a poet, and he was in need of money, like most of us. So he thought, what should he do? So he went to the king's court, and he said he has prepared some very nice poems, and he would like to present it in the assembly. So he was given the permission, and he had a couple of verses written in praise of the king. So he said the first verse, that our king is so great. So the king was very pleased. He says, oh, I give you 1,000 golden coins. Then he went to the next part of the presentation, his poem. He praised and glorified the king more. And the king said, oh, I'm really very pleased with you. So I give you 5 villages. You know, you will be the owner of those 5 villages. And so on. So he did that for 15 or 20 minutes, and the king really promised him lots and lots of treasure, jewels and diamonds and ornaments and everything, you know, one could look for. And so the poet was very happy. He came home and he told his wife that now our, you know, days of poverty are gone, because our king has really promised me 5 villages. He has promised me so many horses and elephants and diamonds and whatnot. So anything you can think of, we will have now. You can really live like a queen. So she also got very excited, and both of them were eagerly waiting that when all this will be delivered to them. So days passed and nothing happened. There was no communication from the king's office, the royal minister. So after waiting for a couple of weeks, he ran out of patience, and he went back to the court of the king. And so the king said, oh, you are here again, very nice to see you, what can I do for you? So he said, my lord, you promised me. He had a big list, so he read out from the whole list that this is what you promised me, and it has been already 4 weeks. Nothing has been delivered to me. So the king laughed. So he said, why you are laughing? It is serious matter for me, because I promised all this to my wife, and she is expecting all this. So the king said, when you glorified me in your poem, you didn't really mean it. And when I promised you in return all this treasure, I also didn't mean anything. So it is that same, it comes when I was talking, I gave this analogy for preaching. That when we are preaching, we have to be practicing what we preach in order to be effective. So so this is having good qualities is one aspect of it. That we develop, we inculcate those qualities which a Vaishnava is supposed to have. We live by them, we live by our words, and we present and conduct ourselves in public, not only in public, even among ourselves as a devotee, which we try to exhibit those qualities which are mentioned here. Now, the other aspect of this particular application is the other side, which is that if we wear, I normally don't wear white kurtas, and I will tell you why, you will get to know. Because if a white kurta has a spot, it will be immediately noticed. Correct? So, same way, if a devotee has a small weakness or a negative attribute, it will be immediately noticed. When we go and conduct ourselves in public, we, like I said, we are representing Srila Prabhupada, we are representing ISKCON. But if our behavior is not consistent with what we are teaching, it will be immediately noticed by others, and it will really give a very, very poor impression of what we are trying to represent to them. So we'll be able to glorify our society, we'll be able to glorify Srila Prabhupada, we'll be able to glorify our acharyas, we'll be able to truly glorify their lordships if we practice what we preach. And this is where I would like to stop and invite discussion, comments, questions.
Hare Krishna. Hello. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Thank you for your class. You were mentioning that we do everything within our willpower, like Kamsa did, to save our life because we fear death. And but we also hear that essentially Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that sometimes even the death of one's reputation is worth in death itself. And we see that everything. So in this verse, it mentions that Kamsa heard an unseen omen or unseen rumor. So he heard that Krishna was going to try to kill his reputation. So he said, I'll kill Krishna's reputation first. So sometimes we had the tendency to intentionally kill others' reputation or unintentionally. I'll just mention one pastime. In the pastime of Haridasa Thakur, Ramachandra Khan intentionally tried to kill Haridasa Thakur's reputation because he was envious. On the other hand, in the same pastime, someone may unintentionally try to kill Haridasa Thakur's reputation because when Ramachandra Khan sent the prostitute to associate with Haridasa Thakur, the prostitute said, can you fulfill my sexual fantasies? And Haridasa Thakur said, absolutely. So if somebody had a recorder, a camcorder, and heard him say that, they'll say, oh yes, he has low integrity. So you unintentionally, he lied for the prostitute's benefit. When we lie, we lie for our own benefit. So you can't judge a book by its cover. So even if Haridasa Thakur had bad character, or we see devotees, even if they, like you said, have one spot of bad character, but in chapter 9, verse 30 of the Gita, Krishna says, Prabhupada will often quote it, apichet su dharacharo bhajate mam ananyabhak, that even if one performs the most abominable activities, we're not child molesters, we're not beating someone physically, nor are we doing anything like Haridasa Thakur, like massaging naked women with oil, but we have our faults, that's natural and all. So one thing I appreciated, and maybe I'd like to quote it, but basically there's a pastime, Bhakti Siddhanta Vaibhav, where some devotees were installing deities and constructing a new temple for Bhakti Siddhanta. And so during this construction, some of the devotees saw a brahmachari misbehaving with a woman. And they didn't say how, they just said misbehaving, we don't know how, but basically the other devotees chastised, many devotees chastised his devotee publicly and embarrassed him so much that he literally left the movement and wasn't going to plan on coming back. And so Bhakti Siddhanta, while these festival activities, this construction, this installation was going on, he asked about this one brahmachari. And then the devotee said, we kind of, embarrassed him and he left, sorry. So Bhakti Siddhanta chastised his students. So this, actually, I would like to quote this verse. I think it's very important. It's from the Bhakti Siddhanta Vaibhav, volume 2, page. The chapter is called Guru-Disciple Interactions. The page is 263 through 264. It's a very beautiful quote what Bhakti Siddhanta said to his disciples. He said, it is difficult to bring a person from the tupper of Maya into the realm of devotion. After eons of floundering in the ways of worldly distress, a rare fortunate soul might at last approach the shore. To again push him back into the ocean is most heinous. A jiva came to us, yet somehow we have sent him back to suffer. That one soul means more to me than all these buildings and other arrangements you have made. So the lesson I took from it is that we should be more concerned about God and less concerned about glory, more concerned about people and less concerned about prestige. So my question is regarding these qualities you mentioned. And so we hear that there's tender qualities and pretender qualities. You said we should practice what we preach. So you was essentially mentioned that. So my question is that sometimes I'll speak for myself. If there was a rich donor and I heard a rumor that he had low integrity, then I would say, Mr. Rich Donor, I heard you have a low integrity. You know, please get out from our association. But can we still get a donation, please? No, we would never say that. Or our family and friends. If I'm speaking for yourself, but if your wife or your son or your other family members had low integrity, you wouldn't expose it to everyone. You know, Prabhu, my wife has low integrity. You know, my son has low integrity. It needs to be exposed. So in chapter 50 of Krishna book, Prabhupada says, demons do not look at their own faults or the faults of their friends. They only look at the faults of their enemies. So that's one thing I keep in mind. So if I could overlook the fault of a rich donor or the fault of police or the fault of my professor because I need their mercy, then I could overlook the fault of other devotees, of the poor, the uneducated. So that's a tendency when you have more power than others, you think you could say anything, do anything, or think anything. So what are some steps we could do to develop these tender qualities? Because And Lord Nisima Day told Prahlad Maharaj, Yatra Yatra Chama Bhata Prashanta Samadarshanaha Sadhava Samutta Charas Tepu Yanti Api Kikataha. He says exactly what you said. Whenever and wherever there are PhDs, pretty humble devotees like Haridas Thakur, who are prashant, peaceful, Samadarshana, see with equal, everyone with equal vision, and are sadhava, decorated with all tender qualities and not pre-tender qualities, it says that person can purify any sinful place in others. Just like you said, we practice what we preach. So what are some steps we could develop those qualities like Haridas Thakur and Prahlad Maharaj?
Thank you, Prabhu. I would also like to narrate a particular, you mentioned about that case of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's response. So something similar happened in ISKCON also. So there was a devotee. I heard this in context of that how the news really travels very fast in our society, especially this kind of news. So there was a devotee who did something wrong, and somebody got to know it, and by the time it even went to Srila Prabhupada, the whole society, the whole world of ISKCON knew what that man has done. And in that other case, he was so embarrassed that he left. And when Srila Prabhupada heard about it, he told his secretary, he said, we have made sure that he doesn't come back to us. This is what we have done by circulating the news all over the world. So Srila Prabhupada had a very unique approach in handling such situations. And he handled them with a lot of love and compassion. It is not that everybody, all the Prabhupada's disciples, were perfect in the beginning. They also made mistakes. But with the love and affection and compassion with Srila Prabhupada approached those situations, it really made a big impact on the individual concerned, and they genuinely tried their best to overcome their own weaknesses and deficiencies. And here again, the other important aspect which I tried to highlight during my presentation was because Srila Prabhupada himself practiced what he preached. If Srila Prabhupada asked his disciples or asked us to do a particular thing, he himself was doing that first. So it is something which we have to pay a lot of, there's a lot to learn actually in this particular section, that we be very careful. And the other aspect which I have heard, which I have been hearing also from my spiritual master, that if people would go to Srila Prabhupada and complain about other devotees, so Srila Prabhupada say, okay, you set an example, you do better than that person. And that's another way of, you know, improving myself. If I come to you and complain about somebody, and you try to tell me, you know, that, okay, I mean, he has that weakness, yes, probably you are right, but why don't you set an example? Why don't you try to do the job in a much better way? So others will also observe it, and they will learn from you. So what my spiritual master highlights normally is that don't look at the weaknesses and deficiencies of others. Look at their strong points and look at your own weaknesses. Because if we look at our own weaknesses, that's the only way we can improve ourselves. If we look at the strong characteristics of other devotees, we can learn from them. So if we follow that approach, then we can certainly make some progress. But if we do the reverse, actually we do the reverse. We find the shortcomings of others and my own one strong point I may have, I'll make such a big noise about it. So this is the approach which we follow, and that's the reason why I'm not successful. Because this is totally wrong. This doesn't fit anywhere into the description given about a devotee. You can, you know, there are several acharyas and goswamis who have written about the, you know, the symptoms of a devotee or the characteristics of a devotee and so on. And this particular approach that I beat drums about my own, I glorify myself, and in others I only see negatives. That is certainly not helping me to make any progress in my devotional life. And one of the other points which you mentioned was about the prostitute who went to Haridas Thakur. So there I was, again, if you know this, I think we discussed that before you came, that if one of the very effective negotiations technique is to remember the word nice. Did I talk about it when you were here? No. Today. You came a little late. So this word nice, if you remember, it will be very helpful. So what it means? N stands for needs. I for the interest. C for concern. And E for empathy. So while talking to others, if we pay attention to these four things, we'll be always very effective and successful in our negotiations. And the point I was making when we discussed this was because Vasudev, while negotiating with Kansa, he used this technique very successfully. So same, if we look at it, we can think that when Haridas Thakur was talking to the prostitute, he knew that, you know, she has come with a particular purpose. And he wanted to, but he had a different plan for her. But if he had discussed that plan with her in the beginning, he wouldn't have been able to achieve what he wanted to achieve. So he followed this, you know, technique, and eventually she realized that, you know, what she should be doing, what was. So that way, I'm going back, like it is part of rerun of what we did. You know, Srila Prabhupada says, I'm just going to read it, that there is no need to study anything. If you want to gain knowledge, simply study Srimad Bhagavatam to get that knowledge. And I would like to repeat it as many times as, you know, needed, because we pay so much of, money, and we spend so much of time going to different schools, trying to learn this, trying to learn that. But for us in ISKCON, this is something like a homemade recipe. It is there. We hear this every day in the morning. The only thing is we have to pay little attention to it, what Srimad Bhagavatam is trying to teach us. Yes, Prabhu, Keshwar Krishna Prabhu.
Thank you, Raraman, for the class. One thing that strikes me here in this whole situation is Devaki's silence when Vasudev offered his their offsprings to pacify Kamsa, when the kids are going to be born, you will have them over for you to get rid of them. That strikes me a lot, because I know it's part of the whole story. It was meant to be that way, but a mother, the most important thing is her son, the fruit of her love, and giving it away is just for me, it's kind of appalling. I always thought a little feminist that I have inside comes out, and I would say that, yeah, that if women would rule the world, there wouldn't be any war, because there's no mother that would send her son to kill the fruit of other mothers.
Okay. No. I'm going to tell you a very nice story, Prabhu, and that will reflect how in a proper Vedic relationship people conduct themselves. So there was a Brahman, and he has his wife, and like in the olden time, Brahmins were not really rich people. You know, they didn't want any possessions. They only wanted what was necessary for them. That was very unlike today's Brahmins, who want to really accumulate a lot of money. You know, every temple you go in India, they want you to give a lot of donations, because the Brahmin wants a car, and Brahmin wants this, and Brahmin wants that. So anyway, so this Brahmin was living happily with his wife in a very austere environment. And some rich devotee felt that, oh, he should do something for the Brahmins, because Brahmin is, you know, serving the community in such a nice way, and he deserved to be rewarded for that. So he was very rich. He gave a horse, very nice, strong horse, to the Brahmin. And Brahmin kept the horse because it came as a donation, and he was trying to look after the horse, but he realized that he didn't have enough to eat himself and to maintain his wife. So he was finding it very difficult to maintain the horse. So he decided that he should sell the horse off, and whatever Lakshmi he would get, it will be used for his own maintenance and maybe maintaining the deities and his preaching program. So there was in India, they have cattle fair. I don't know if you are familiar with that. So cattle fair is where people from different from the neighborhood will bring their cattle, and they will be buying and selling there. Some people want to sell their cattle, some people would like to buy them. So he decided that there was a cattle fair, and he and his wife decided that he should go and sell the horse there. So when he left, it was like some walking. It was not like next door. He had to walk a couple of miles to reach the fair. So when he left, some people, some crooks of the village, they saw him, and they asked him that, Brahman, where are you going, and what are you doing with your horse? So he said, this horse was donated to me, but I have no real use for it, so I'm going to the fair and I will sell it off. So with that money, I'm going to maintain myself and my family. So he said, oh, that's a good idea, but why do you have to go that far? I have a nice cow, or let's say, I have a goat. So you give this me, and I can give you a goat in exchange, and it will be easy for you to sell the goat. So Brahman said, yeah, that makes sense, maybe. So I'll take, you take the horse and give me the goat. So they took the horse and gave him a goat. Then he, you know, was walking further. Then after he walked some distance, another set of crooks thought, oh, let's try to take advantage. So they asked him the same question, that Brahman, where are you going with this goat? So he said, oh, I'm going to the cattle fair. I had a horse, and these people, they gave me this goat in exchange for the horse. So now I will go and sell this goat in the fair and, you know, use that money for my maintenance. So he said, you know, by the way, I have a very nice dog which can really, you know, protect you and take care of your, you know, protect you from thieves and all that. So if you want, we can give you the dog and you give us the goat. So Brahman was a simple person, so he said, these people are making a proposal, he accepted it. Then he walked further, and they, in exchange for the dog, they gave him a cat. And he accepted that also. And then as he was very near the fair, another person contacted him and said, oh, Brahman, what are you going to do with this cat? So he said, I'm going to sell it in the fair, and with whatever money I'm going to get, I'm going to maintain myself. So they, you know, so then he said, oh, why don't you give this cat to me, and I will give you something which is really useful for you. So he said, okay, what will be that? So he said, I'll give you a needle and thread in exchange for the goat, you can, you know, make some use for it. So he said, yeah, okay, you know, needle and thread will be something which will be useful. My wife can really make some good use of that. So he exchanged that for the thread and needle. And then he says, okay, now I don't have to go to the fair because I have what I wanted. So he came back. He started walking back. So as he was close to his village, the people who saw him going, they asked him, oh, you have come back so soon, what happened? So he said, oh, you know, on my way, the horse was exchanged for a goat, and the goat was exchanged for a dog, and the dog was exchanged for a cat, and the cat was exchanged for this needle and thread, and now I don't have to go to the fair, I'm going back, so my wife will be very happy to receive this. So this guy, these were two guys, they laughed loud. So they said, why you are laughing? He said, your wife is going to murder you. So he said, no, my wife is not like that. You don't know my wife. So they said, we may not be knowing your wife, but we know wives in general. So she is going to really be mad. So he said, no. He was very confident and you know, sure that his wife will be very happy. So they said, if your wife doesn't chastise you, we'll give you 50,000 rupees. That was the cost of the horse, actually, with which he started. So he said, okay, I have so much confidence in my wife, you can come with me. So they said, okay, when you go, you are just going to give it to her and don't tell anything about our, you know, this bet, this arrangement which we are making. And if she is quiet and she is happy to receive this, we will give you 50,000 rupees. So they started walking back towards Brahman's cottage, and Brahman, when he reached home, his wife also asked the same question, that you are home so early, you didn't go all the way to the fair, and where is the horse? So he said, oh, you won't believe what happened. So she said, please explain. So he explained quickly, and he says, you know, in the end, I have got this needle and thread, so I thought you'd be very happy to receive it. She said, yes, I needed it very badly, because one of the buttons of your kurta is broken, and I need to stitch it. So this is really something which we needed. And these two guys outside, they were so shocked that a wife would react to what the husband did in such a way. And they eventually had to give 50,000 rupees, which was the cost of the horse originally, to the Brahmin. So the purpose of telling this story is that wives in the Vedic times, they trusted their husband to take care of them, to protect them. And, you know, so that way, she, Devaki, had full trust in Vasudev that whatever he is going to do is for their benefit. And Srila Prabhupada also refers to this number of times that, you know, is so much is being talked about, especially when Prabhupada was here, women live was on its peak or was like becoming very popular. And that's where Srila Prabhupada says so many times that women are so delicate that they need protection. And he say this in a very positive way, that you know, not like in negative way, that because people can easily take advantage of their being compassionate, their being innocent, and their being delicate, that they have to be protected. So, and in the olden times, women did that also. They totally had faith in their husband. They trusted their husbands. And that is also why Srila Prabhupada explains that a woman or a female child has to be always protected. First by the father, then by husband. And when husband goes in one ashram, then he leaves the wife with the son, grown-up sons. They are going to take care of her. So that's how the Vedic system worked. Okay. Suhal Prabhuji. Okay. And thank you so much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.